Welcome to the Loans on Demand podcast, the show where we flip the real estate status quo on its head and put loan officers into the driver's seat. We give you all the tools, strategies, resources, and mindset needed to modernize your mortgage business and thrive. My name is Luke Shankula, aka Longform Luke, and this is the Loans on Demand podcast. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Loans on Demand podcast, the show where we help loan officers flip the status quo on real estate agents and put loan officers in the driver's seat. And I'm excited because today we have Kayla Callender, or should I say Callender? I don't know. She is the mortgage meteorologist, big on social media. And I'm excited because I think we're going to get some big gems today. So welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. I love that you know how to say my name, Kayla Callender. This rolls off the tongue and people say, is that your real name? Yes, it is. So yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to just chat and get into it here.
Awesome. So I know it's important. It's funny because my buddy, his name is Skyler, but he gets spelled with an A. He intentionally sometimes will misspell it because people be like, wait, isn't it spelled like this? It's like, yeah, names matter and pronouncing people's names and spelling people's names matter. So I get it. It's that big of a deal, but some people get pretty offended about it. You never know who you might be slightly offending by not taking it seriously. So really, I do think it's important for people to try to say people's names correctly and also to spell them correctly. So Anyway, let's get into who you are. Like, give us a little background on who Kayla is. What has you in this crazy industry? What's kept you here, right?
Ooh, wow. Hitting me a hard question right away. What's kept me here? No one's asked me that. I'm Kayla Callender. I'm a mortgage lender in all 50 states. And I've been in the business, goodness, since about 2014. So 10 years. And one of the things about my job is, you know, mortgage lending has evolved significantly from paper applications to, you know, electronic to now we are in a space of virtual social media and being able to connect with people in ways we never have been. And so for me, I think, you know, you ask what's kept me in this business. It's the relationships, 1,000%. And not just relationships with clients, relationships with realtors and financial planners and referral partners. And then, you know, being that lender for the family again years to come. And it's just really cool to be part of something so significant. But I also think that one thing that has kept me in here is I am really good at educating my borrower, really good at putting content out to educate. And I think that's something that's missing in our world of mortgage, especially in the last few years. It's transaction, where now we've had to really show who we are and how to connect. And that truly is what's kept me in it, I think.
Well, and obviously the reason I ask is because, you know, it's pretty easy to know why people are in the industry in years like 2020 and 21.
Yeah.
But in years like 22 and 23, when we're getting our butt beat by the market and, you know, we're having the worst year since 1995. Like, you know, that's a good question to ask because ultimately, like, you're in this industry because you're passionate and you stay in this industry because you actually, you know, love what you're doing, right? Yeah, the money's great and, you know, there's good years, but obviously years when most of the market is down 40, 50, 60%, it's not as much of a no-brainer to be in the mortgage industry. Yeah. So understanding sort of the background and what makes you sort of passionate about this industry is, I think, important to understand, because again, I think for people that come into the industry just for the money, they're going to dip out of the industry because they don't have the money. And for the people that are have the staying power to stay through these hard times are the ones that, you know, I think get rewarded on the other side of this sort of turnaround. Because I do think, you know, in the next, I don't know, is it 6 months? Is it 18 months? I don't know. There's going to be a nice little boom of business, which is going to be good for the people that were able to stick around.
There will be. And it's been very telling the last year or so, like who's really great at their job. And who told the client, because it's really easy to just take apps and lock loans. And now you need to get granular and you need to be able to articulate to your client what it takes to get a mortgage and to also, Luke, navigate this crazy, you know, rate environment, low inventory. And you almost need someone that's going to empathize with you as you go through such a big change during such a difficult market.
Yeah, 100%. That's just something we talk to people about too, is like so many people try to, you know, hide behind this idea that they're just educators. And I'm like, okay, cool. You're an educator. You're an advisor. You're also a salesperson and you know better a lot of times than the consumer does. But I do think in this market, especially, it's educating them on, okay, you know what? Let's look at historically, how has the market performed? I mean, other than like, let's say 2007, 8, 9 or whatever that period was, historically, it's always been a pretty good time to buy a home. Right. I mean, if you can afford it, If you can afford the down payment, if you can afford the monthly payments, if you can afford it, like buy it. Also, you know, understanding their situation. And I talk about this all the time, but one of the things I say is the online application is one of the worst things to happen in the mortgage industry. And the reason I say that is not because of the app itself, but because most people got lazy and didn't do the work that you're talking about and understanding their situation. Hey, I'm a guide. I'm an educator. I'm going to show you what this looks like, preparing you for the future. So talk a little bit about that. How do you approach each of your clients from that perspective, right? From the education, from all of that stuff.
You know, I love what you just said because I just got off a call with a client and I knew that they were approved with another lender. And I said, what was your experience like? And she's like, well, it's my first time buying a house. So I mean, good. And I'm like, okay. Like, and I'll start to ask them because I always have a discovery call. I try to have the call even before they apply. I want to get to know what are your fears? Why are you buying? You know, what is the reason for this? And how many dogs do you have? And how old are your kids? And there's so much going on when you think about buying a home that in order for me to really help somebody and understand what they need, you need to have that discovery call. You need to have that hopes and dreams and wishes and fears call. And so I always start with that. And then I get an application. Then I know when I get the data, I know exactly, oh, okay, yeah, I know they were going to pay that off, or, oh, they said they were going to have a job, at, you know, they're a doctor and they're getting a new job. I know that that's coming. So it allows me to not all of a sudden be creating the narrative in my head because I hadn't had the conversation.
Sure.
So I'm always having a conversation, always, always. And from there, I get an application. But as I always tell people, they say, well, you know, we get the question, what's the right program do I qualify for?
Right.
I always say to my clients, I say, you know, when you go to the doctor, you don't just say, hey, doc, not feeling good. Can you give me that medicine? That doesn't happen. So I say, I need to do my analysis and my x-rays and my blood work before I can then prescribe you and diagnose you.
Sure.
Because essentially, prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. So when I say that, it kind of clicks for them. They're like, that's why Kayla's asking me all these questions. And what's really cool, Luke, is when I ask all these questions, they say, no one's ever asked me that.
Right.
That's great. So in short, I have that call. I have that discussion. We get an app. We do all the income and we really dive in. And then we have another call and we talk about, okay, I know you said you were comfortable with a $4,000 payment. Here's what we can approve you for. You know, we start to kind of then connect the dots. And I think just that piece of having that call up front makes such a difference in how people feel cared for. In my 100%, opinion.
100%. Mm-hmm. Because the truth is, so many people think that sales is like pushing something on someone. And the truth is that sales is identifying a problem and you're prescribing the solution to the problem, right? And so many people are like, okay, cool. Like, I'm not a salesperson. That's because you have a wrong definition of what sales is. Sales is ultimately leadership. And it's like, hey, you know what? I'm not going to push something on you that you shouldn't be buying.
Right.
But if I truly believe, like, and I tell people this all the time, I'm like, hey, guess what? Rocket Mortgage? Like, do you think they're going to care? Like, they're going to put 2 points on there. Like, they're going to do anything they have to get that person to apply, to get them in process, because they understand that object in motion stay in motion. And so they want to get them into process. And so we're so scared to like ask and to get people to take that next step. And it's like, why? Like, okay, I'm going to over-educate someone, but I'm not going to ask for the business. They're just going to go to the next person who is going to ask. Right. And so I think, you know, a mix of the two things, but man, the quote that you said, I say that quote all the time, prescription without diagnosis is malpractice, because ultimately that is what you're doing. And that is what actually sells people. What sales is the discovery process, is understanding their pain points. And so many people think that, again, that the thing that sells people is the pitch, the rate, the program, the this, the that. If we don't understand what their goals are, we are not being a fiduciary. I'm not saying necessarily loan officers have that necessarily, but they should. We're not, because we're not understanding. Like, okay, so we're going to put them in a 30-year fixed. What if they plan on selling in 2 years? You didn't have that conversation, so you don't know. You're just cookie cuttering them into something that maybe is not the best thing for them, right? So it's like, I get it. Rate matters to a certain extent, but that's just because consumers have been taught to care about rate, not because they actually care about rate. Because if you ask most people, probably don't even know what their rate is, right? I mean, maybe in the last couple of years they do, because everybody loves to brag about their 2.75
rate. They do.
But in general, in most normal markets, people aren't bragging about their rates all the time. And so, man, I love that you're talking about that and that that's part of the process, because I think so many loan officers are missing out because you talked about transactions. They're so transactional. And what I think you're doing is you're probably capturing a considerable amount of the follow-ups, right? The future transaction. You've been in the industry for 10 years, so maybe you have some data to prove that.
Yeah. And I think what I'm trying to do is, you know, you had said something that I'm finding is so common is the client doesn't even know what to ask besides what's great. And so if we can get in front of people quicker or educate our referral partners. Like when you tell them to go shop, don't just say shop a rate, say find out how, you know, each lender that you refer to, if you need to send your three, send your three, but tell them to shop, you know, not just the rate, but what are their fees? What are their programs? Are they accessible? Are they asking you questions? Are you getting along with them? Do you have a vibe with them? And all people know what to ask is what's the rate? So right. We need to educate and educate our partners as well.
Right. 100% agree. I mean, and let's not even get into the three referrals thing, but I think that's a necessity because ultimately, how many transactions does a consumer do and how many does a loan officer or a real estate agent do? Like we're assuming that the consumer knows things that they don't, right? It's the curse of knowledge. I mean, as a marketer, I start talking about stuff like pixels and, you know, offers and unique value propositions and things like that. And people are like, the heck are you talking about, right? I need to understand that. I need to, you know, sometimes we got to take that third, fourth, fifth level language and stop using words like DTI, LTV, and, you know, crazy stuff like that. You know, loan officers like to throw around like as if everybody knows what that means. I also think by using that language, people feel somewhat belittled because they're like, okay, this guy's using words that I don't understand. So he's talking down on me. Mm-hmm. I think it's common.
Long. I think too, is even when you talk to the consumer, it's like you ask them if they have any questions, they don't even know the questions
right.
to ask.
Right.
So 100%. I completely agree.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I even have heard people say stuff like, yeah, the best first question is like, how can I help you? I'm like, what if they don't know? Like, they don't know what you do.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I want a mortgage, I guess is the question they're going to ask, but you already know that if you're on a call with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
so,
I do.
I don't know. To me, that's not a great question, even though supposedly some gurus say that's a good question. But hey, you know what? Who am I to say? What I want to sort of move over to is I know you do a lot with social media, you know, so talk a little bit about that. What are you doing with social media? Because I know you're attracting consumers to you, I'm assuming. You're probably attracting real estate agents to you. What do those strategies look like?
You know, I think it's evolved every month, every year. I started out on LinkedIn 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then I always thought I would never be that girl on Instagram or TikTok doing these weird reels. And yet that's what was getting me attention was education and entertainment
right.
together. And what I found was, you know, Instagram and TikTok are where a lot of people are going to get information.
Right.
Poured into that a bit more the last couple of years. And essentially what I do is I don't just post about what I do for a living. I'm more than just my career. If people know me, they know that I have four pit bulls. They know that I have a lake home. They know that I live in Fargo, North Dakota, because I always talk about the weather. So I change up what I post about, right, Luke? Like I'll talk about mortgage. I'll talk about the weather and dogs and the lake, because everybody, you always hear, you work with who you know, like, and trust. And it's true. And so individuals forget that if you post about your kid's soccer game, or the fact that you're doing 75 hard, you are going to attract people that are attracted to what you're posting about. And that can lead to other things like business. And so I really focus on posting and sharing things about who Kayla is as a human. Sure. That's one of the things that I've found a lot of success with. I can't tell you, look, how many times I've posted about my dogs and a realtor that has a similar dog has connected with me and now we're best friends. And they don't even live around where I live, but yet we can be a resource for each other.
Sure.
And then the other part about social that I really am passionate about is just engagement. Mm-hmm. As we get caught up in the, what should I post? And, oh, I forgot. I didn't look great today, so I didn't post a video.
Right.
People forget about just engaging and supporting other people's posts and commenting, liking, and sharing, but commenting with actual, like, you know, I know authenticity gets thrown around loosely, but being authentic with supporting people. And it's amazing what happens when you start to pour into others. You've maybe noticed that too, is you'll pour into someone because you want to help. And then the next thing you know, they're pouring into you. And that engagement piece is just forgotten. And I think it's so important. And it's been pivotal for my business.
I will echo that because I've even been known to do that in the past. Sometimes when you don't feel like doing social media, you like throw up a post real quick and get out. But you know, interestingly enough, you'll see that your engagement on your own posts will go way down if you're not engaging on other people's posts for a couple of reasons. One, the algorithm is going to, you know, support the person that is engaging with other people's content. So, you know, the likelihood of if you're engaging with their content, they're going to see more of your content. But on the other side is also the law of reciprocation, right? Law of reciprocity, where people are like, man, this person keeps commenting these cool things on my posts. Like, let's go check out what they're doing. Oh, cool. They're doing some cool things too. Let me do the same thing. And all of a sudden you have this sort of like, whatever, parasocial relationship type thing where like you kind of have you know, this online relationship, you've talked with people and all of a sudden it's like, cool, like I actually know this person. I know what they like. I know what they care about, all that kind of stuff. But I will say, well, LinkedIn for me is so hard because I just feel like it's not authentic. And I feel like it's a bunch of people just rolling around like in their suits, like all like, oh yeah, that was a fantastic post. And you're like, bro, like, is anybody not just sitting around here brown nosing on this platform? So it's been hard for me. I'm trying to get into LinkedIn. I realize part of my problem is I don't like scrolling through LinkedIn, whereas on Facebook and Instagram, things like that, it's much more natural.
Yes.
For me over the years to do that. So it's like just getting used to scrolling through LinkedIn, commenting, liking, doing things like that. And then that starts to build up. Because funny, I was talking to a guy that does a lot with LinkedIn. He said, honestly, biggest thing that I found, engage with the people that are posting, engage with the people that are consistent, engage with their stuff. And all of a sudden they're going to start going to your stuff. All of a sudden the people that are in the comments, they're going to see your comments that are thoughtful. They're going to go to your stuff. Like that all starts to build that reciprocity. I'm like, okay, cool. So basically the same thing I do on Facebook, yeah, apply to LinkedIn, just, you know, spend some time on it. So pretty interesting stuff, huh?
Yeah. And it's crazy how just one connection, no matter where it comes from, I always call it the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Have you ever heard of that? It's like, you can name anybody in Hollywood and connect them to Kevin Bacon in 6 movies or less, or six people. And when I think about opportunities that have come my way or people I've met, I wouldn't have met, a lot of them started with LinkedIn, which was just because I was on it fresh and early. And it's like, had I not been on there with that person or that person, one of my best referral sources I met on LinkedIn 5 years ago. They don't even live around here and their whole team refers to me. And I'm like, gosh, had I not been on LinkedIn posting about things, where would I be today? So you just never know where it can go.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, and you talked about engagement, right? I mean, the thing that a lot of us talk about is posting ghost, right? So many times we think that the thing that's going to get us business is the posting. And a lot of times that's not where the relationships really are built. It's built in, you know, one, on the comments first before you get all creepy and get into people's DMs, but then, you know, talking to people via Messenger. And again, partially that's the algorithm. Partially that's just the fact that we're really just being social on a social network, right? You know, we're being rewarded by being social on the network, which is cool. What do you suggest from that perspective, right? I mean, because to me, social media is hard because literally built to try to keep us on it. So how do you set that sort of boundaries around usage? And, you know, because it can easily go from business to, ah, crap, I just spent 2 hours just mindlessly scrolling and I probably should have been doing something.
Man, I think I'm still working on that, Luke. I really think I am. It's hard because you find yourself like, I'll go scroll to support, right? Go scroll to engage. I'm not necessarily posting, obviously. So I'll scroll to go see what individuals are doing. It's so easy to get interrupted. It's so easy. So what I found that has worked for me is I get up early in the morning and I'll do my devotionals, you know, and have that time before the rest of the world is up. But that's when I'll engage. I'll almost get it out of the way. And that's when I'll take the time because I have my pre-workout or coffee and then I'll go work out. Well, I have to work out by X time. So for me, that's kind of a little hack that I've used is I do it when I know, you know, like you're sipping a drink, you've got 10 minutes and then you're capped. Sure. Otherwise, if I start to do this in the evening and I have nothing on my calendar after 8 p.m., it is easy to just go down the rabbit hole and also compare yourself and think, I'm not doing enough, or look at this post. And then it gets to be late at night and it can truly consume you. Yeah. So I would say find a time where you know that, you know, maybe if you're a realtor, show up, you know, 20 minutes early to your appointment, or if you're a lender, just take that time, but it's easier said than done, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, that's why I asked, because, you know, selfishly, I'm like, oh, maybe she's got good boundaries. But yeah, it is hard because social media, while it has its obvious positives from a business perspective, it also has its obvious negatives from that perspective as well. And I have burnt out on social media many times over the years. Like, you know, one, because you have to be so consistent in order to, this one reason I started a YouTube channel, to be honest, within the last couple of months was because I was like, all right, I don't know how much value I've put on social media and it's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone, never to be seen again. Whereas like YouTube, we can continue to, so I'm like, I'm going in on something that's a little bit more evergreen that I could put my efforts into, but also be able to use as an asset for future. But yeah, social media can have that dark side of it, which is like, one, we're seeing ads all day long. So we're being sold to all day long. In addition to that, if you're following a bunch of other sales and marketing type people, you're getting ads from them and you're getting their type of stuff. And so you're constantly being sold to all day long. You're constantly also being sold this idea that everybody's life is perfect, right? So I tend to talk a lot about things that are a little bit more raw. Not a lot, but I do every once in a while, I talk about things that are more raw because I get comments all the time and messages all the time, people saying like, man, thank you for sharing. That's like, you know, everybody else just kind of just shares their highlights. And I'm like, I get it. Like, I know it sucks, but sometimes it's like, I do it for the purpose of if this helps someone else realize that other people are struggling and other people have gone through similar things, it's worth it. Just like the podcast, right? It's like, I think this podcast is so valuable. I'm like, if I can help one or two or three people, like that's what matters. So I don't have to help millions of people. I mean, one person, two people, three people. So seeing it from that perspective, but you can go down that dark sort of comparison rabbit hole of like, oh, this person, man, they're crushing it. They're making so much money. We don't know that. Maybe they suck. Maybe we go look up the production and they're closing, you know, a loan a month, right? Like they're trying to do the same thing you are. Like, we don't know that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things where people are afraid to be raw or more raw because like, well, people think, well,
right.
What attracts humans is other humans. And when you see someone having faults, I don't know about you, but I have a lot of faults. So it's almost like, oh, I'm not alone. And you don't even know how many people you can impact by just being yourself. It's just, it's easier said than done though, Luke. It's like,
of course.
I've got clients following me. Do I really want to put this out there? And I think if it's coming from your heart, I mean, if you're really focused on the value add, you're not going to care how you look and you're not going to care being open and vulnerable.
The caveat to this is do not use social media as your personal diary. No one wants to see your drama day in and day out every single day. But, you know, the way I say talking about it is like, use it as a way to reflect and tell stories about things that may have happened to you. The other thing I learned too was I was working with a mindset coach years back and I was like, man, I feel kind of like inauthentic not talking about things I'm going through. And they were like, you don't need to talk about the things you're going through in the moment. You can tell lessons from 6 months, 12 months back when you're ready to talk about the lessons. And so you don't have to be like, oh man, today I lost a loan and I'm just, you know, what a bad day. And like, don't be that person because that's the person that's bringing a bunch of negativity. But it is also on the other side of it is like being true to who you are. It's like, hey, I had this problem. I've been talking about ADHD a lot recently because I didn't know I had ADHD until like a year ago. I had an ops manager that was like, Luke, you need to get tested. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She's like, you have ADHD. I said, no, I don't. I have ADHD. So I've been talking a lot about like some of the things that come along with having ADHD, you know, the substance abuse, things like that. And it's like, I just talk about it and people are like, man, that's so relatable and things like that. And it's like, this sucks, but at the same time, might as well tell the lessons.
True. Well, and ADHD combined with social media, I mean, that is,
yeah.
Let me tell you, from experience, it's hard. And I think, you know, you said it, it's like, once you're through it, it's easier to talk about. Once you're in it, you're getting these emotions because we've all been through things in our lives and we look back and you're like, oh, I shouldn't have maybe talked about that. It was so fresh. So I love that you said that, like, maybe once you're through it, like then you're ready to talk about it.
Yeah. And I think it's important because I mean, again, like we don't want to use it as a diary. We want to use it as a way to showcase the lessons that are learned. And I'm a big believer in failures and things like that teaches us. And my executive coach verbalized this really well for me probably a couple of weeks ago. And he said, you know what? Like success is not a very good teacher because I mean, think about like anybody who started in 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people thought they were the best loan officer ever in 2020 and 21? That was just right place in the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What if they started in 2022? Right? Wrong place at the wrong time. You know what I mean? Like, so failure is actually a better teacher than success is because again, success could be, you know, there's circumstances that could actually have impacted the fact that you won, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, selling little widgets online, like read a book about a guy who during the Trump period, he was doing like a survival gear type stuff and they were just crushing it. Right. Just crushing it. And then, you know, as sort of the stuff shifted, like all of a sudden he found himself like bleeding money every single month and realizing that, okay, well now this sort of, there's like this shift in the market. And it's like, that is the true lessons is learning, okay, well, how do I survive these times? And so that's why I honestly believe that the last couple of years has been a perfect opportunity for the right people to step up and learn, all right, well, how do I structure my business so that it's not as susceptible to market changes like this? What are the systems I got to implement? How do I improve my customer journey? How do I improve my systems on conversion, right? You know, instead of having 5 realtors, maybe I need 35 realtors. How do I create systems to get those 35 realtors, right? There's a lot of things there that needed to change in order for you to survive this industry.
And I think a lot of individuals may have given up. I think, yeah, take the time off. You know, a lot of people were so busy in 2020, 21 that they just need a break. But at the end of the day, I hope that those individuals were also focusing on their systems and how they could become better because there was a slow time. And I think now it's still slow for many. Like, take this time to really look into how you're doing things. One of my biggest things that I looked at was my conversion. And I can't control interest rates or inventory, but I looked and I had all of these approved people. And I'm like, well, I did something right, but my numbers maybe weren't as high because I couldn't convert. Why wasn't I converting? Was I following up? Was I following up with the real estate agent? Was I giving value to the clients or did I completely just let them go? But in reality, I think it was inventory and braids. So now I'm like, okay, how do I stay in front of these people? How do I continue to pour into them and let them know I'm here? And so I think if you're a loan officer, you should really be taking this time, if it's slower, and looking into your systems, because now is the time, because you've got the time.
Yeah. Well, and you talk about conversion, and you're right. I mean, some of those things you can't control. So what can you control? Maybe my conversion right now is whatever, 5%. So how many more people do I have to talk to in order to get the numbers that I want to get to? Like, that's the biggest thing is, like, you know, maybe you can't really control so much the conversion, because you really can't, right? I mean, you know, in sales and just in life in general, there's this concept of leading versus lagging indicators. And so many times we focus on the lagging indicators, which are kind of the results, the outcomes, the goals, the things that we want to accomplish. But like, you can't actually like force someone to buy, right? I mean, you can persuade, you can have influence, you can't actually like force someone to do something. What you can do is you can, all right, I'm going to just talk to 10 people every day. I'm not going to freaking stop working until I talk to 10 people. I, you know, whatever it is, right? Like whatever your metrics are, all right, I'm going to get at least X amount of applications a week. Well, you can't really control X amount of applications, but you know, hey, for every 100 people I talk to, I get 10 applications. For every 10 people I get applications from, I get 5 pre-approvals. From every 5 pre-approvals, I got to get 3 closings. So I got to talk to 100 people a week, right?
Yeah, like, reverse engineer that. If this is your goal, like if you're not breaking down your numbers as a loan officer and or your pre-quals or your conversion rates, that's where you're missing. If you can get dialed in on that, that is like your acres of diamonds, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and recommendation for everybody who is listening as well is, if you can record some sales calls and listen to them, most likely you're going to realize how bad you are, how much you suck at sales. Not that you're not a good person and all that kind of stuff, but listening to your calls is one of the best ways to realize the amount of ways that you're missing out on opportunities, right? When you slow things down and you can listen to it in retrospect, like, oh man, I should have said this here. You know what? I should have probed a little deeper here. I should have asked a better question here. Oh man, this was not an objection. This was just a clarifying question, right? Mm-hmm. And little things like that really sort of increase the quality of the conversations. And also there's a concept that I learned a while back from a mentor called regression to the mean, right? So like you go to a training, you learn this, you know, hey, here's the script. We're going to do this script. And all of a sudden, great. And then time passes and all of a sudden you kind of go back to what you were used to. And so without reviewing calls and doing things like that, you're just going to continue to regress to the mean. And so part of growth is staying on top of that training and continue to grow over time. As from that perspective, like, do you spend time, you know, learning new things? What's kind of that look like from your perspective, from a growth trajectory?
Yeah. So I am always that type that I don't know if it's a sickness or a problem where I'm just want more information, more information. Mm-hmm. One of the struggles is how do you retain that and how do you practice that?
Right.
And so for me, this is not a selling thing. And I actually have it right here. Have you heard of the Remarkable? Okay. So
I have one.
So I just started using this because what's happening, Lucas, I had all these ideas and I was learning things. I'm listening to podcasts. I'm having conversations with someone like you. And I'm like, I'm taking notes. Like, I'm finding that I have things everywhere and I have a system, unless it's like when you go to the gym and don't have a plan for the weights and the reps. So I just got the Remarkable 2 days ago. I'm kid you not. And I'm like, I need something where I can have a safe place to hold things that I can pull it up on my phone. One of the things that I'm kind of leaning into is anytime that I hear something or I hear something that I don't know, like if you ever hear a word you don't know or a topic that you're not sure of, or maybe in mortgage, it's how does that actually work? You know, how does inflation really impact rates? You know, I will write it down and I will then look it up or have like a list. So for me, it's having an organized system first and foremost. And then I try to take at least a couple times a week to hop on a webinar, or every morning when I get ready for work or I drive, I listen to a podcast, one that's like entertaining or helpful, like the Skinny Confidential about, you know, health and wellness and tips like that. But then I'll listen to some type of podcast that has to do with investing or my job, anything that's going to create a better version or intelligent version of me. And then I will also take notes on that. So I'm always, always listening to podcasts. But my one downfall that I have is the scrolling at night is I've got my book by my bed, but I need to shut that down because it's amazing what little progress, like 10 pages a day, can do. So it's nuts, but you just have to do it. Just take the 20 minutes during the 10 pages. But now I have something that I've got my checklist that's holding me accountable, because it's so easy to just throw this stuff around and then be like, what did I learn? And how am I implementing that? So
Right. Yeah, the Remarkable is a little expensive, but it is pretty cool to be able to have a digital version and works really nice. I mean, I've had it for a while and I'll be honest, I haven't used it as consistently as I should, but over the last whatever couple months, I've been really trying to be consistent. And as an ADHD person, I tend to talk over people. So my executive coach is like, Luke, anytime that you're trying to talk over someone, I'm good at it on the podcast, but in other scenarios, I get excited and I just start talking. And so he says, write it down. I also have a problem with, I don't want to call it combative. I have a very strong opinion about things and not everybody likes to debate. So even with my team, you know, he's like, you need to write things down because like, think about how people feel when you kind of shut them down, even though you don't know you're shutting them down. I mean, so I had to learn like, all right, you literally railroad people without knowing it. And so one of the things I'm doing is in calls, I just write notes, put myself on mute, write notes, and then I can, you know, say it later, or I can, you know, share it in a different way where I'm not like overriding them. So little things like that to sort of help has been something I've been using Remarkable for, but I like the whole list idea, you know, something it's been hard with ADHD to just, stick to a system, to be honest.
Or you're like, oh, there's 75 checklists I can download. I don't know which checklist. Yep, I was like, okay. We need overwhelm. To just decide because indecision is a decision. So I hear you.
Awesome. So, you know, I like to leave some sort of strategy tactic. If you were, let's say you were getting started again today, or if you're giving advice to a loan officer in this market, what is like one or two things that they could do today to go out there and get business, to get more exposure, you know, to help them grow?
You know, I think there's a couple things that come to mind. One is more on just mortgage lending. One is involving social media. I think that, you know, you and I spoke about, it's so easy to assume that a borrower even knows how to complete an application.
Right.
So what I have done and what has helped me is any questions that I've gotten from clients, I will take note of that. And then I have a spreadsheet where I ask clients questions and I'll basically evolve this spreadsheet to ask questions and then say, you know, hey, did you know that, you know, your first payment is not due when you get your mortgage because maybe they're in a lease? You know, just these little things that people say, oh, I didn't know that. That is your bread and butter. The things that people don't know, take note. And then take that and create social media content with it. Because it's so easy to just assume people know. But that is also just gold when it comes to your ability to post. Go and create a 20-second video. When we say VOE, what does that mean? When we say VA and FHA, what does this mean?
Right.
You've got tons of content that you can use. So that would be my tip, is focus on those questions that you're getting. Or when people say, I didn't know that, I had no idea. That is your way to have those calls and be better at those calls and create content that really client can digest and help them and add value.
And I love that. That's something that we hear all the time. I was like, well, what do I post? I'm like, you literally just said it. You post content that people are asking. I mean, that's the easiest type of content to post because you know specifically what they're asking you is, you know, again, what's LTV? What's DTI? What credit score do I need to qualify for this? Like little things like that. I mean, you know, people think they need 20% down, right? That's like the main pervasive myth, I would think, is the 20% down. And, you know, that's probably been overdone, but I think you can always put your own spin on things like that, or shift the way, or talk about a specific program, right? Talk about, you know, here we have the California Dream for All right now. And a lot of people are using that as sort of like a way to get people in the door. You know, there's FHA 3.5, there's 3% down, there's down payment assistance programs, right? There's little things like that, that people don't understand, don't get. I mean, I worked for a mortgage company for like 3 years and I finally talked to a loan officer that was there and he's like, hey, you don't need 20% down. I worked for a mortgage company. Yes, it was a reverse mortgage company, but I still worked for a mortgage company. I should have known better. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I try to tell loan officers all the time. Like the consumer doesn't know. And when people get mad about things like, well, why did the consumer not send me the 7th page of the bank statement? Because they don't know. Stop pretending like they know anything about this transaction. They know nothing about anything, like zero. They know nothing. Stop assuming that anybody knows more. And that's, again, the curse of knowledge. Just stop assuming that people know anything about the mortgage transaction. Because the truth is, unless they're very, very sophisticated, which is probably going to be like 1% to 5% of the entire buyer pool, like they're not going to know anything. Mm-hmm. So be an advocate, be a guide, and also be patient. Because, again, people don't understand what they don't know. So I mean, to me, that's huge. Any other thoughts, any other advice for any loan officers in this market?
You know, I keep hearing the survive until 25, and I keep hearing that, but I think it's like, there's no reason why right now you can't have insane success in 2024. You just have to slow down sometimes and just stop and really like take an hour of your day and just reflect on how you're doing your business or where are your deals coming from. And like we talked about conversion, like just maybe take a day or an hour and just really look at your business, because we're so focused on, oh, I'm going to go to that conference, or I'm going to listen to that podcast, or I'm going to go get my next deal. It's okay to just press pause, really just dive into how you've done and your goals are and really how to like just be better at what you do.
Yeah, agreed. 100% agreed. So if anybody wants to learn more about you, connect with you online, learn more about, you know, where you're working. I don't know if you're recruiting or anything like that, but, you know, shout out how people can connect with you.
You can Google me, Kayla Callender, Callender with a K. But I'm on Instagram, Kayla Callender Mortgage. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on TikTok, Kayla Callender. I'm on Facebook. I'm on all the things. So essentially, I just say, if you can go to Google and you can spell Callender, K-A-L-L-A-N-D-E-R, you will find me and you can connect with me.
Awesome. That's perfect. For someone that loves social media, dropping all the social medias is the perfect thing to do. So awesome. Thank you so much. And for me, like my big takeaways from today was really, I mean, coming down to if you are using social media, it comes down to consistency, but it comes down to really just engaging with people and making social media social. And what I liked about what you talked about is something I talk about a lot too, is so many people like to think, or maybe they don't like to think, but they think that what's going to get them success, what's going to get them business is posting about business. Generally, that's the stuff that's going to get the least engagement. And you know, if that's all you post, you're actually probably going to get less business by only posting business than you would if you posted maybe 10% to 20 to 30% business and the rest of it is who you are as a person. So that's what I've learned over the years. I know there may be some other coaches out there like, you got to educate your people. And da, da, da. I'm like, to be honest, no one wants to really like only read mortgage education, right? Like, cool. Like every once in a while, yes, you should be sprinkling in some education because you should be a thought leader. But you know, the truth is people want to see your dogs. They want to see your family. They want to see, you know, the lake house. They want to see whatever, the soccer game, all this stuff. They want to see that because that's what they're attracted to. And so to me, like that was a big thing. That was something that I think so many people miss with social media is understanding like, just be yourself and that's what's going to help you win. I know authenticity, you said, gets thrown around a lot. I say the same thing. Authenticity gets thrown around a lot, but the truth is be really authentic. Don't fake it. Like, don't pretend like you're something else because a lot of people do that. And then you show up in person like, oh, this is a freaking jerk. Yeah. I don't want to work with this person. Yeah. So be who you are. Be funny if you like funny. Share memes if you like memes. Be serious if you're serious, right? Mm-hmm. Like just be who you are online. And I think that'll serve you well. So if you are listening to this and you are looking for some help on flipping the status quo on real estate agents, go to flipthestatusquo.com. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day. Thank you for tuning into the Loans on Demand podcast on loansondemandpodcast.com.